Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, hello, test. Let's see, is this thing working? Okay. Hello, test, test. I don't know. Let's see. I think we might need a little bit more. All knobs to the right. Yeah, that's the way to go. All knobs to the right. The AT, what is it? What do we call that? That's the, I just had it written down. AKTR syndrome, the all knobs to the right. Good morning. Live, or sort of live, from Rome. This is the 1 April 2008 edition of Solder Smoke 80, after a bit of a delay. We've had some technical trouble here, guys. I've had a streak of really bad technical luck. Started with a flat tire. Haven't had one of those in a long time. But I'm proud to report that I heroically demonstrated the ability to change a tire after all these years. But that was just the start of my trouble. Soon after the tire went bad, I started having trouble here in the shack. A bad sign was when the clock stopped. This little clock, and it just stopped. And things were starting to go wrong. Then my old set of really ancient Hi-Z headphones became extremely Hi-Z and stopped doing anything. So that was another bad sign. Then I was working over on the bench, and I noticed that my Radio Shack digital multimeter, started giving some strange voltage readings. It was reporting that my solar charged battery had become miraculously, really fully overcharged, and I realized that the problem wasn't with the battery under test; it was with the little 9-volt battery inside the meter. I listen to this. I even had a defective dummy load. You know you're in trouble when your dummy load has gone bad. I built this dummy load a long time ago. Actually, it started out as an attenuator, but it's got a 50 ohm input. It'll dissipate a lot of power. So it serves as my QRP dummy load at the test bench. And I was testing my double sideband transmitter, and I was getting all kinds of really weird, dirty signals at the output. I couldn't figure out what was going wrong, and then I just, I was scratching my head for a long time. You know how you do a lot of unnecessary troubleshooting. And finally, I looked down at the dummy load, and the little lead that I had from the coax connector to the actual resistors in the dummy load had broken as the thing shifted around in. It got a little bit scrunched and in shipment, and so my dummy load was also extremely high Z, like infinite, and not the 50 ohms it was supposed to be. So anyway, then things got really bad, and my beloved eMachines computer that I've been using for the last couple of years basically went and toes up. It's not that bad. It's not like the hard disk failed. Everything is still there. It's just that I can't access it. I don't want to labor you with the computer difficulties. I'm having trouble with it. I don't know whether it got a virus. I don't know how it would get the virus. I had the antiviral software running all the time. All that. I promise I really did. And but something is in there. Either a file got corrupted or I don't know what. If anybody out there is kind of a wizard with Windows systems, PCs, let me know. Please do not send me any messages saying, "Oh, you should have had a Mac," or "Oh, geez, you should be running Linux." I've heard that already. Okay, I can't go back in time, So anyway, there we are. Enough of the computer talk. But anyway, the computer went bad, so of course I had to jury rig up a replacement here. Now you guys are going to find this, you know, I think you'll find this admirable. I mean, I am talking to you now on a completely homebrew machine. I mean, I slapped it together. I found an old circuit from 73 magazine, and it's amazing. But with just a handful of 2N2222 transistors, half a dozen LM5555 chips, and a pocket full of tunnel diodes, I am on the internet, and quite proud of it. Just kidding. So I actually dragged out the old computer I used before I got the eMachines machine, and the old one seems to be going okay. Although you'll probably notice that this solder smoke lacks some of the technical refinements of the previous editions. Anyway, enough of my tale of woe. I mentioned tunnel diodes there, and that got me thinking about our man in Vermont, the guy up there who's been doing all the experiments with QRPPP, tunnel diode transmitters, and lately single transistor receivers. We'll talk about him in a minute, but he, thinking about his experiments up there, reminded me of something I read recently, and I wanted to share this with you guys. I'm reading from the ARRL publication QRP Power. It's a collection of articles on QRP, and there was an article in the September 1995 issue of QST by Richard Arland, K7YHA. It's called Hardcore QRP, Ultra-Low Power HF Hamming Using Milliwatts and Microwatts. That's of course interesting and very apropos of the tunnel diode experiments going on in Vermont. But in this article, what really caught my eye was this bit, and I'll stay here within fair use guidelines. In 1923, Robert Cruz, 1XAM, technical editor of QST, wrote in an article entitled "Miles Per Watt: An Argument for the Small Set and for Intelligence in Place of Brute Force, Also a New Efficiency Contest." O.M. Cruz wrote, quote, "Doesn't more credit belong to the man who hauls signals 50 miles per watt than to the one who has to use great power to haul them only 25 miles per watt?" It says here, and then Richard Arland goes on, "Remember, this was in the early 1920s when amateur radio was in its infancy. Regenerative receivers were the order of the day for a modern ham shack. Nonetheless, Cruz extolled the virtues of doing more with less, which has become the modern-day QRP'er's creed." In his 1924 QST series entitled "The New American Amateur," listen to that, guys, what a great title, "The New American Amateur." That's us. Even if you're not American, you can be part of this. You, too, can be a new American amateur. It says here, in the series, Cruz blasted what he called the ether busters, the watt hogs, the thunder factories that crowded the bands with intense interference. The new American amateur, as defined in 1924 by Cruz, was not satisfied with mediocre station and antenna performance. He sought an efficient station by using low-loss, high-efficiency equipment designed by... I'm sorry, let me go back and say that again. He sought an efficient station by using low-loss, high-efficiency equipment design and by constantly working to improve his operating skills. Anyone who practices the art and science of low-power communication can, even today, rightly be considered a new American amateur. Fine business there, Richard. Thanks for that article from back in 1995, and thanks to the ARRL for reproducing it for us. Does anybody have that series of articles that they could send me? That'd be great. I'm sure there's more great stuff in there. And I did a search on the ARRL website and couldn't find it anywhere on the web. But if anybody has that and can send it to me, yeah, that'd be fantastic. I'd really appreciate it. Anyway, okay, the new American amateur. I guess the guy, for me, that kind of epitomizes the new American amateur is our friend Michael Rainey, Alpha Alpha One, Tango Juliet, up there in Vermont. I've already dubbed Michael the poet laureate of QRP, and the more I read about his activities up there in the Green Mountain State, I think that was an appropriate title. He operates out of an underground shack that he dug out himself. It's underground. He's got some pictures of it up on his website. Very fine business. He's got one lower level where he stores all the parts. And he's got an upper level that he where he actually does the home brewing. And he heats the whole thing, I think, with one 150-watt light bulb. Very fine business. So I not only is he the poet laureate of QRP, I'm calling him the hero of the Hobbit Hole, the Henry David Thoreau of radio. Fine business, Michael, and thanks for sharing with everybody via the QRPL list the very exciting results of your experiments. I had a kind of a, I thought was kind of funny exchange on the email with Michael. He was talking about one of his experiments with crystal radios, or he was talking about building an electromechanical radio, and I kind of was teasing him a bit, and I said, Michael, all right, why not include a truly homebrew solid-state device? I know you've been cooking your own Zener diodes, and that is, of course, admirable. Michael, at this point, was taking store-bought Zener diodes and putting them in the oven to affect some sort of quantum mechanical changes in there that I don't really quite understand, but you know, that was okay. I was saying, you know, it's good that you're modifying store-bought Zeners. But then I went on, but it is time to move beyond store-bought solid-state devices. It is time to roll your own. Stop being such an appliance operator. How about replacing the diodes with galena and cat's whiskers? Or better, use iron pyrite, fool's gold. I have a small stash here that Billy and I picked up at the Natural History Museum in London. Let me know if you need some. Anyway, that was my kind of very tongue-in-cheek, you know, message to Michael. And he immediately responded. He says, Bill, you're right. When I returned to ham radio, I did so with the vow that I'd only operate with homebrewed equipment using salvaged components. But the fact is, the really hard work's already been done for the home brewer by the semiconductor manufacturer. This has always bothered me, too. I mean, I know it's a troublesome thing for true radical fundamentalist homebrewers. So some years ago, I'd worked out how I was going to fabricate my own transistors, and this is where I knew that I had kind of messed up by accusing Michael of being an appliance operator for using store-bought semiconductors. So this line here was what tipped me off that I had seriously strayed into dangerous territory. Michael wrote, some years ago, I'd worked out how I was going to fabricate my own transistors. While it's supposedly possible to build a point contact bipolar device using a broken germanium diode, I felt as though it would be cheating to start with purified doped germanium. Yeah, you know, as soon as you start using already purified doped germanium, you're in the appliance operator camp. We know that. Anyway, Michael said, instead, I worked out how I was going to build a thin film field effect transistor. My plan was to evaporate an aluminum gate onto a glass substrate. The aluminum would subsequently be plasma oxidized to form the gate insulator. Over this, I'd chemically deposit a layer of CDS or ZNO, I think it's zinc oxide, or is that copper sulfate? I'm not sure, to form the channel semiconductor. On top of this, I'd evaporate the source and drain contacts. I'd even figured out how I'd ultimately weld tiny wires to the contacts. Oh my gosh, you know, okay. When I read this, I responded, Wow, Michael, I was being sarcastic when I urged you not to be such an appliance operator, but I didn't know how sarcastic I was being. I think you are as far from appliance op status as you can get. You, my friend, have a really bad case of the knack, 7-3 Bill. He does. Michael, yeah, you've got a bad case of the knack there, old man. You better you better keep generating solder smoke because, of course, that's the only known treatment. All right. Okay. Hey, one really interesting thing happened, and I found this really surprising. You know, Michael's been experimenting out there in Vermont with really, really low-power tunnel diode beacons. And this is really, really low-power stuff. Most guys are using, I think, pretty sophisticated software to pick it up. And before my computer went dead, I don't think this has anything to do with it, but I downloaded some of the software, and I couldn't resist. I knew the frequency that Michael was operating on. I got my new antenna up. I got the Drake 2B completely retubed, ready to go, and I figured this would be a good test. I did some calculations on gray line, the best gray line times, and I got up at the right hour. It wasn't difficult for me. I was pretty much an early riser. You know, I mean, we must be talking zillions of miles per watt. I don't know what it is. I haven't done the calculation, but I think I got him. I think I heard him. I think I heard the hero of the Hobbit Hole all the way over here in Rome, Italy. And I'm going to let you guys decide. And you know, Michael's tradition has been to transmit a secret code word. The first one was Grail, which was a American cultural, or I guess British cultural reference to Monty Python. I'm not going to tell you what the secret code word is in this one, but listen carefully. Pull out your sophisticated software, or just use your main QRP device, your ears. Michael notes in a recent email that the human ear can discern sounds even from the displacement of one single hydrogen atom. So we are a true QRP machine. So put your QRP machine to work here and listen to this recording and let me know if you can pick out from the noise the secret code word this week. I'm not going to reveal it here on the show, but if you get it, send me an email and we'll keep track of who got it. I think this was really almost one of these kind of miraculous radio things. So here we go. Here's here's my recording of Alpha Alpha 1 TJ's microwatt beacon from Vermont as received in Rome. Here it goes. All right, I thought that was very cool. Okay, and like I said, send me the emails with the decoded secret code word. Let me see here, looking at my list. Just let me tell you a little bit about my ham radio activities here. I mean, the computer going bad, no, every dark cloud has a silver lining. And actually, this bit of bad luck with the digital machine allowed me to spend more time on the workbench and on the air, actually. And I think I told you I've been on the air on 20 meters with a double sideband, with a double sideband transmitter that I built out in the Azores. And I've been talking to the locals here. We have a net we get together every night at 8:30. which is a good time for the Italian schedule. Good time for me, too. It's right before I put the kids to bed. So anyway, we've been getting on, and we've been having great conversations. I'm using my little 1-watt, well, I hoped it was 1-watt QRP transmitter. But, you know, I and double sideband transceiver, and it's been great, and it's been really a lot of fun. I've made good friends here in the the Rome ham radio community, but I don't really have enough power out. Some of the guys have a tough time copying me here locally, so I started working on the rig, and this transceiver, this is one of those things. I'm sure you guys have projects like this. It's something that I started to build, I guess, maybe, what, 6-7 years ago? And since that time, I guess I've kind of learned a lot about home brewing, and especially about design through email exchanges and discussions with Mike and with Wes and Roger and others, and all the stuff that we've been talking about here. So since I built this thing, my understanding of the circuitry, my test equipment, and my home brewing abilities, especially in the design area, have changed a lot and have improved. And now I go back and I look at what I built, and I can see where I did things that were either wrong or at best kind of inexplicable. Why did I put that in there? Why did I do that? Because when you don't really have an understanding of the design process or the parameters or really what you're doing when you're trying to just hack something together, you end up with some really kind of ugly hacks, and it's not the right way to go about doing this. So I think I'm getting closer with the help of the worldwide fraternity of solder melters. I think I'm getting close to doing it the right way. And anyway, I now look at this circuit, and I see problems in the amplifier chain. The other thing that the other great thing that's been happening is I've been discovering the truth to statements made by both Wes and Roger Hayward about the need to be able to do accurate measurements at QRP levels. And I've been putting to use the power meter that Wes and others. Let me get the article here. We were talking about this in Solder Smoke a while back, way back. This is the Simple RF Power Measurement article by Wes Hayward, W7ZOI, and Bob Larkin, W7PUA. This is the logarithmic power meter using the AD8307 chips. My friend Thomas in Norway sent me the chips, and anyway, this was one of those projects that just came together, seemed destined to be built, and I haven't really used it much, but now I'm using it, and that makes it a lot of fun. So I've gone in and I've started measuring the power levels, starting with the NE602 that I'm using for the balanced modulator, and as Wes has pointed out, those things don't put out a lot of power. And then I've sort of watched measured the power levels as it's gone through the three transistor amplifier stages that I have, and I've been, you know, checking for linearity and finding that there's not a lot of it there. So I think what I'm going to do is just go back and start from scratch on the amplifier chain. Just start out with the power level, the clean power level that I know is coming out of the NE602. And then what I want to do is design an amplifier chain that'll get it up to about 100, 200 milliwatts, something like that. And then I've already built a little outboard amplifier that I think will do a pretty good job to get it up to several watts at least. But anyway, I'm gonna try to do this one right. I'm gonna try to do the design myself and understand, you know, why I'm making all the decisions on biasing, why get the impedance matching right, and then just test it stage by stage, and hopefully at the end I won't have a lot of the uglies that I see sometimes as I test the current version. But hey, it's still been fun, and meeting the locals has been great. I've even gone solar and charged up my solar panel and been on the air with solar stuff here. So that's been a lot of fun. I've got one of the other projects I have pending is I've got to go in there and do the standard mod on my D104 microphone. The internet is filled with suggested modifications on that the old classic chrome lollipop microphone. All right, let's see what else. Hey, one of the guys here in the local community I told you about, John Franco, was on the 9X-ray Zero Radio de-expedition to Rwanda. I think they're still going. John Franco's back in Rome, but we several of the guys here in town managed to speak to him. He's one of the guys on the 20-meter net that I just mentioned. I think that was, and it was neat they got to talk to him. Let's see, just a few odds and ends here. I don't want to make this one too long because I'm not sure how good my homebrew computer is going to do here. But I guess it's getting around that time of year when we're going to be looking for correspondence to some of the big spring and summer QRP events. So let me know if you can kind of provide coverage from. You serve as a solder smoke correspondent at those events. We'd be happy to get your input. What else? Let me see. Oh, yeah, looking at the little cluster map of who is looking at solder smoke, I realize something's going on here. It's interesting. You won't the numbers of people that are showing up on this map are significantly lower than the number of people that I know are actually visiting or using the solder smoke site. What's going on is the cluster map does not your visit to solder smoke will not show on the cluster map unless you actually visit the site, visit the www.soldersmoke.com site with a web browser. So in other words, if you get solder smoke by iTunes or iPod or any of the other kind of automatic RSS feed systems, and lots of guys do that, your presence in the world of solder smoke will not be noted by the cluster map. So if you'd like to appear on the map, just log on to the site, and the system will make note of your presence there, and you'll either add to one of the already large red dots, or if you're in an exotic location, you'll put a new red dot on the map. So I encourage you to do that, especially if you're off there in an exotic place, because it's always fun to see where people are listening from. So please visit the www.soldersmoke.com site and put another red dot on our map. We've got some interesting ones. Saudi Arabia has shown up. I think it's Dahran. Bangkok. Several listeners in the Philippines. We still see somebody listening in Tehran, in northern Pakistan, Suriname, Anchorage, Alaska, and Taiwan has shown up. So great, glad to have all those all of you guys listening. And again, let's see if you can send me some. See if you can have some more folks show up there, and we'll see if we get some more red dots on the map. Let me look. I'm kind of discombobulated here this week because of the computer failures, and I look bad computer luck. But I'll go through. Oh yeah, you know, I don't even have. We're going back to the old days here, guys. The digital gong is on the. It's on the hard disk of the other computer, and I haven't recovered it for this one yet. So, I mean, everybody else, I'll be careful. I'm mindful of hurting people's ears problem here. So wait, here's the old one. Remember this one? Oh man, that was awful. Hold on. That wasn't it. Hold on. It's now time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. That's awesome. I'm that's what Billy would say. I'll have to get him in here to record that. Anyway, this week's mailbag, I just got a nice note from our friend Ramakrishnan formerly of Bangalore, he has moved. He's now in Singapore and seeing about getting on the air. His yearning for a copy of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur, we think it's been taken care of. Thanks to everybody who wrote in and offered help. I won't go into the details in this edition because the operation is still ongoing, but it looks like Ramakrishnan will have on his Singaporean bookshelf pretty soon a copy of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. So again, thanks for everybody who wrote in. We get the email from our friend Greg up there in Finland. Greg has written in many times over the years, and he tells us now he's involved in an effort to do modifications to move the very common Citizens Band rigs to 20 meters, and he's doing some good work on that, and anything that could be done to make those those horrible old boxes into something truly useful are much appreciated. Stanley, 9 Hotel 1, Lima Oscar, wrote in, and Stanley's down there in Malta, and he's working on a PIC LC meter. He's a capacitor ESR meter. He wants to get into beacons and wants to know, wants suggestions on what bands would be good. I'm really getting into the beacon thing here, too. I'd like to get a beacon going here from Rome. We'll have to see. But anyway, thanks for writing in, Stanley. Mark Moj, M-O-J Johnson. I think it's W-8-M-O-J. Mark, a.k.a. Moj Johnson. Mark is the guy who has given us the solder smoke theme, the theme music at the beginning of the end of the show. So thanks again to you about that, Mark. But Mark wrote in, and he sent me a clip of a particular episode of the Gene Shepherd Show on WOR New York. And I'm telling you, this thing was fantastic. I'm going to try to get the link to let you guys listen to this thing. But it's from, I think it's January 23rd, 1973. I think that's the date. Oh, man, I wrote it down. No, I can't find it. Hold on. Let's see. Where is it? Well, you can tell I'm, like I said, kind of disorganized here. But anyway, from January 1973, this episode that Moj sent me a clip on, it has Shepherd describing his group of radio homebrewing fiends. And he describes one particular kid that he grew up with that was really very, very technically capable and advanced, and who, and this must have been, I guess, what, the 1930s, late 30s, built a homebrew tube-type television receiver and used it to receive some of the very early experimental transmissions. But the way Shepherd had this great way of describing things, especially technical things, that he talked about basically he didn't use the term, but he talked about a bunch of teenage guys who've been afflicted with the knack and the intense interest in electronic components and circuits and the strange ability to understand circuitry and the deep interest in it and the urge to build things, the late night sessions in the basement, the kind of pale complexion, the sickly looking complexion that comes from hours spent not in the sun on the playing fields but in the basement with soldering irons, all this kind of stuff. It's just really great. You know, I listened to this thing, and this broadcast took place probably 3 or 4 months before I got my first novice ticket. So, Mark, I think that broadcast that you sent me might have been what caused me to fall victim to the knack. So I'm going to try to get a link so that you guys can listen to this thing too. But it was really good. And Mark, thanks for sending that along. Matt writes in about a chip that's apparently better it would make a better balanced modulator than the NE602 that I've been using. As you recall, I kind of borrowed from the balanced modulator circuit from the K2 and used an NE602 chip in several of my rigs here. Matt suggests that a chip called the MC1496 might be better. And I looked at the data sheet, and it certainly does look better. Maybe has a higher component count around the chip, but it seems like it was designed for balanced modulation purposes. Let's see what else. I think that's it from the mailbag this week. We have a couple things here. One thing I wanted to mention, and it's the balloon theme. I don't know if you guys know about this project called The Spirit of Knoxville, but the bunch of guys in Knoxville, Tennessee, were trying to do transatlantic balloon flights and using amateur radio equipment. They had a beacon going. I think the beacon was on 30 meters, but we were aware of it when it was starting to fly. And apparently they made it almost all the way across. I think they made it to within 300 miles of the Irish coast. Very fine business, really interesting, and there's some great stuff on the internet about it. So if you do search on The Spirit of Knoxville, you'll find it. Our man in Dubai, Ron Sparks, has some comments on balloons, and I think I'm going to wait and hold off on that until a later date because the 2N2222s and the LM5555s might give out here at any moment, and my this temporary jury rig computer might just die on me. So let's wrap this up before we push our luck too far. I apologize for the technical difficulties and the delay, but anyway, I it's been great to be back here and get this thing. Get this thing going. I do have some iron pyrite here. And if anybody wants a chunk of it, let me know, and I'll send you a chunk of iron pyrite for use in crystal radios. And one other thing I wanted to mention, Jim, WB5UDE, has revived an old homebrew website called Homebrew QRP is Good for You. This was the site of George KC6WDK, some really admirable QRP stuff on there, so check it out. Anyway, sorry for the technical difficulties and the delay. There's one other thing I really got to mention. This is really good. this is what happens when you've been away from the solder smoke for a while. Steve, our friend Steve, G0FUW, has sent me in a really interesting publication. It's it's put together by a guy well known especially to the UK QRP community, Tim Walford of Walford Electronics. Tim puts out a lot of great parts. I didn't know this, but he's putting out a really nice newsletter called Hot Iron. You know, obviously closely related to solder smoke because, well, the hot iron is what generates the solder smoke. But Tim's publication is called Hot Iron, and it's the Journal of the Constructors Club. And it's in paper form. It's not in electronic form, and a lot of really good technical information, good projects, great circuit suggestions. I really enjoyed it. Steve sent me a copy, and then I think he must have been talking to Tim, and Tim sent me several other copies of the magazine. I really like it, and it's got a kind of it's different from some of the other homebrew publications, but it's got its own definite kind of style and flavor to it. I like it a lot. So I want to encourage Tim to put it on the web. I mean, snail mail, it's fun to get it in the snail mail form, but man, if you put this thing on the web, your readership would exponentially increase. I think you could do it pretty easily. Just scan it into PDF files and put it up on the web there. The world needs more publications like this, and we need them on the web. So, Tim and Steve, thanks for sending that in, and I'll really look forward to reading future editions. And if anybody is interested in subscribing, let me know, and I could pass along Tim's snail mail address here, or you could try to reach him via email to Walford. That's WALFORD, Walford Electronics in Somerset, in England. Anyway, okay. Listen, I'm reaching down there. The 2222s are getting kind of warm, and so I think I better wrap this thing up. We're not going to have our traditional closing music here. That'd be pushing the envelope. I'll just say a 7-3 from Rome.